started.
So, good morning. Thanks for letting me talk here, and thanks for coming early. So today I'll talk about classification of flat virtual pure tangles, and also a basis for its associated graded algebra. This is 5 minutes of review, and maybe for people who are not working with virtual knots, I'll just go through it. So why do we care about virtual knots? So virtual knots generalize naturally classical knots, and in fact, classical knots inject into virtual knots. And then more interestingly, so the quantum invariants, so those that come from R matrices, generalize, extends to virtual knots naturally. But this is a sort of rough statement. There's some subtlety there. But quantum invariants extend to virtual knots, and so we think that virtual knots may be a more natural domain for these quantum invariants. Okay. So what are virtual knots? I'm gonna just say you probably have heard Dross say it many times, but I'll just go through it again.
What do you mean by quantum invariants?
Those that comes from R matrices. Yes. So I'll just say what usual knots are, which everyone knows, and then say how we generalize. So usual knots are planar directed graphs with crossings as its vertices. Okay, so these graphs are embedded on the plane. So these are two knot diagrams, and we all know that the crossings are tetravalent with cyclically ordered edges. The opposite edges are paired, and then there's two kinds of sign, right? So the knot diagrams are what we usually know. These are two different usual knot diagrams. And then we modulo by the famous randomizer moves. Again, these are planar diagrams. Okay, so what are virtual knot diagrams? Well, what are virtual knots? Virtual knots is exactly what I just said, except we exclude the word planar, okay? So what I consider virtual knot diagrams are just the directed graphs with the crossings as vertices, okay? So for example, here are two same virtual knot diagrams, because the only thing that differs in these two diagrams is that, well, this strand here, instead of going straight in this diagram, it goes all the way around. But as a graph, it's just the same. But then, of course, when I draw some graphs that's not embeddable on the plane, necessarily I might have some artifact which looks like a crossing, and that's virtual crossing. Okay. And then you modulo again randomizer moves, but now again these are considered as graphs, right? So for example, this strand here could go around, you know, when you draw it on the plane, and then comes back here. Okay. So that's a that's the randomizer moves. So a priori, it's not clear that usual knots should inject into virtual knots because the diagrams don't inject. But in fact, after modulo the randomizer moves, it does. And there's a nice proof by Cooperberg that proves that. We have been talking about the W quotient of virtual knots. And so today I want to consider a simpler quotient, because so the motivating question is that so how much bigger is virtual knots than classical knots, right? And then the simplest quotient that you could do is to kill knot theory within virtual knot theory. So you make the two crossings the same and see what's left. So you might think it is trivial, but in fact it's not. So my thesis is that we classified flat virtual long knots.
But at the level of knots, you don't have something, because I mean, if we take the other crossing commute, and now I have that all crossing are involutive.
Sorry, you don't take this. So.
Okay.
I do not model by overcrossings compute.
Okay.
It's a completely different Okay, so I don't want to buy this, but right, because if I want to buy both, then it's true. Okay, I'll go a bit into detail because this talk I prepared was for 20 minutes, so I could take a bit longer. So the way that we actually analyze flat virtual knots, to make our lives a bit easier, we actually talk about, instead of flat virtual long knots, we talk about descending virtual long knots. So descending, so since we're talking about long knots, there's a notion of sort of earlier and later, and I could always talk about, so I have V knot going to flat knot by sort of sending any crossings to just a flat crossing. This is not virtual here, okay? And it splits by actually taking any flat crossing to a descending crossing, okay? And it splits because this composition is identity. And so notice that's why I need long, because I need the notion of descending. And secondly, you might think that, to go back, why don't I choose all positive crossings instead of all descending crossings? But actually, so that if you choose all positive crossings, then that map is not well-defined. Because a randomizer move here might map to a non-randomizer move here if you choose all positive. Okay, so we'll actually instead talk about descending long knots. And so here's the theorem. So flat virtual long knots are in bijection with these canonical diagrams. So flat virtual long knots, it's in one-to-one correspondence with diagrams, the canonical diagrams, which is characterized like this. So here, wherever it's red, it means every crossing that it participates in is over. And then whenever it's blue, every crossing it participates in is blue. Okay, so the characterization is that I should have a knot that just do over. So these are the real crossings. This is virtual, so ignore it. So over, 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 and then under, 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 under. Okay? So that's the first property that it has to have. And then secondly, within this kind of diagrams, you should exclude bygones. And if you had included randomized one, then you should also exclude kinks. Okay? So first of all, in general, if you look at long, flat, virtual, descending knot, you could go red, so over, and then under, and then again red, and then under. Okay, so in general, it's like red, blue, red, blue, red, blue, red, blue. But the ones that are canonical are the ones that are just red and then blue. Okay?
Karine, sorry, can I make an unrelated comment? You can go like 50% slower and it's still fun.
Really? Okay, anyways.
Speak slowly.
Okay, now if you look at these diagrams, there's a bright sun there. If you look at these diagrams, you could definitely represent it symbolically, right? I can represent each of these diagrams as a signed permutation, because clearly the red strand goes through the crossings in a certain order, and when it comes back, it's in a different order. So I have a permutation, okay? And then the crossings are signed, so just give it a sign as well, okay? And then the fact that I exclude bygones, would correspond to the fact that, you know, image of consecutive pairs of numbers should not be oppositely signed consecutive numbers. Okay? So there's the canonical diagrams are also in one-to-one correspondence with sort of its symbolic representation.
It is a correspondence with a subgroup of the enriched symmetric group?
In one-to-one correspondence with, right. So, but for all n, so for any n.
Okay.
So it's infinite, okay, because I can have any number of crossings here. Okay, so it's the union of signed SN, but restricted to a subset. Okay?
And it's not a subgroup, it's a subset.
Yes.
No group.
Yes, but it is no composition.
Yes, it's important.
But even with an pixel.
Right. Okay, so remarks. Okay, so this result generalizes easily to multiple strands as long as you don't include closed loops. Okay, so your skeleton should not have loops because I need the notion of descending. Okay, and your strands should be ordered. Okay, so as long as you can have n strands ordered and oriented, you're still fine. And I call that pure tangles. Okay, you could definitely use it as an invariant on long virtual knots or virtual pure tangles, since flat is the quotient of it. I think Jerome might have mentioned, most of you already know. But there's a topological interpretation of virtual knots, and for long ones, you just add a boundary component and have the curves end on the boundary component. So topologically, a flat virtual long knot or pure tangles are immersed curves on surfaces with a circle boundary where the curves have to, you know, have their ends on the boundary. And also, not just that, you have to modulo adding or removing empty handles of your surface. Okay? So that's a topological interpretation. And finally, this is pretty interesting to me right now. Just like for usual knots, you could consider braids, right? So for a flat virtual braid, pure braid, okay, this is the presentation. I mean, it's an honest presentation, where this sigma ij is my generator, and I and j runs from 1 to n, and I and j are different, but I could be bigger than or smaller than j. There's no, I mean, if you know virtual braids, then you know this presentation. Okay?
It is good to get what you have here, so it is the kernel. First you take the kernel of VPN into SN, sending any sigma I into the identity.
Right, except sigma ij squared is still not 1.
You say that this generators are involved.
No, so sigma ij squared is not 1.
Yes, but here.
No, it is not. Sigma ij, this is ji.
Ah, okay.
Okay, so that's actually very important.
Okay,
so this is still an infinite group. So if I have sigma ij to the n, I mean sigma ij still has order infinity. Okay, so it's not a cosmic.
Okay.
Okay.
Because you kill the free product of the pair of generators.
Right. So. Okay. So so what does sigma ij mean? So I just want to say what they mean. So sigma ij would mean strand I over strand j, positive. Okay, so strand I over strand j, positive. Mm-hmm. And then its negative would be I over j, but negative. Okay, and then I would have j over I, positive, and j over I, negative. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are the four cosines. So if you draw them in Gauss diagram, they actually look different. Okay, so I just want to say that this relation here, when you map it to pure tangles, okay, so so the braids definitely map into the pure tangles. Pure tangles are again labeled strands, tangles with no closed loops. So clearly these pictures would be also a pure tangle, okay? So since I have the result for the pure tangles, I also have an invariant for the flat virtual braid group. Okay. So my conjecture is that flat virtual pure braids inject into the flat virtual pure tangles, and I have an idea how to prove it now because I was just in the conference and someone talked to me and they gave me an idea. And so this is pretty interesting to me because if I could show that this group injects into the pure tangles, then we would have also classified the braid group. So we would have solved the word problem, except the words, the final words is not going to be in these letters. So because the canonical diagram might be in tangled form. Okay, so I will do an example of this and this example later. Okay. Okay. So a sketch of the proof. So in fact, the proof is pretty simple. Once you know the statement, so I have to thank my advisor for conjecturing the statement. Okay, so what's the idea of the proof? So the idea is that we want to, for each equivalence class, we want to find a canonical representative. So how do we do that? We put a partial ordering on the set of diagrams, and we want to have sorting moves. Sorting moves are moves that take a diagram from one equivalence class to another diagram in the same equivalence class, such that the sorting moves always go down in this partial order, okay? And then the main part would be to show that, you would have different ways of sorting if you use sorting moves. So the main non-trivial part of the proof is to show that, this is well-defined. Okay, so all different ways of sorting actually leads to the same result. And then at the end, you also need to check that it is actually well defined under all randomized loops. But once you check this, it's not hard. Okay, so what is one of the main moves that I'm going to use? It's going to be the one that decreased the number of red blue, because my canonical diagrams will have just one red and then one blue. In general, I'll have red blue, red blue, red blue, red blue, red blue. So every time I see blue-red, I want to do something to get rid of it, okay? So this is the group finger move. Thick bands here means just multiple strands, and it could be oriented either way, okay? So these could be plus, minus, whatever crossings, okay? So this is a bunch of crossings, and this is a bunch of undercrossings, in, again, no matter what the sign is. So you want to take the maximal blue interval, and then a maximal red interval, so meaning here before that, the next crossing should be under because this is red, and this is blue, so the next crossing, the strand that goes over it should be over. Okay, so take this, and then the move goes, just yank all of them on the other side. I mean, clearly it's a composition of red and maximum. Okay, so this is the move. So notice that I have gotten rid of blue-red because now it's just red. Okay, so instead of red blue, I now have just red blue. Okay, so you should flip to the next page of your handout, and the main ingredient of the proof. So I use a two-dimensional induction and a diamond lemma to show that it is well defined. Okay. But the main ingredient is this sort of commutative diagram. Welcome. Okay. So basically, I can have a diagram where I have the choice of doing two different moves. Okay. And I want to show that doing them in different orders gives me the same diagram at the end. There is a way to do them so that it gives the same diagram at the end. So here, I have the blue and then the red. Okay, so these are just all blue, so you could just think of them as together. Okay, so the horizontal box, I could clearly do a finger move on this side. Okay, just pull all the red over the blue. Okay. And at the same time, if I look at the vertical box, this is all red, and this is the blue interval. So there's a blue and then a red. Okay, then I could get all of those down. So all of those down. Okay, so I have finger move this way, finger move this way, and now there is a way to go to the same diagram. Namely, now after doing the horizontal here, I now have all these red, and I can just pull them down, right? And now I pull them down, I get this. And here, I have done the vertical, so now I want to do the horizontal, and I have a red, and then just all of these guys are blue. So I just do, how does that work? Okay, so this is what I have pulled from the CDS. This, so this is the main ingredient. Okay.
So this shows that if you do one or the other, you can do another one and get even less.
Right. So you plug this into the induction argument along with other diagrams like this, which are simpler, and then you get that in the end it's well defined. Okay. I wonder if I should, maybe I should do an example. Or
yes.
Yeah. Okay. So. I have drawn this already.
Wait. Just
the other one.
The other one?
Yes. That one?
No, that's not.
No, the other one.
You have two.
Thanks. Okay, so. You start with a general descending long virtual knot. Okay, so it goes red. Okay, so how does it go? Red. And then it goes under here. This is virtual, we don't care. Then so it's one, and then two, and then three. And then it's over, so it's red. And then it goes I just labeled them sort of randomly. B, and then one time for the other. Okay. So I see that there is a blue-red interval, so I straighten the blue-red. So when I straighten the blue-red, I get this. Okay. So I start with this, right? Because I have red, and then a bunch of blue, and then red. Okay. So I straighten this blue, so I would get on the blue, I would first undergo one, and then two, and then three, right? Okay, so I will go one, and then two, and then three. So you just, okay, so I did it because it takes me a long time. So one, two, three, and then it would be the one prime. So it's here, sorry, one prime. Okay, so I've only redrawn the diagram, I've just deformed it. Okay, and now I see very clearly that this is that illegal blue-red interval. So I do the finger move, so I just pull all of these guys here. Okay. So the main thing that you should notice is that this increases the number of crossings. Okay, so it's not, so when you go to the canonical form, you might have actually more crossing. Okay. And I don't have a bound on it.
More slowly, what part of the picture on the left?
Sorry.
What part of the picture on the left correspond to the picture on the right? No, not this one. The middle and the right, sorry.
Middle. Oh, so this square box?
Yeah.
Is this square box?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. And then external, I mean everything outside the square box I just copied. Okay? And then at this stage, you should really be, so now actually I should have continued, except I already am in the situation where I have only one red. So I go red. You know, if you trace it around, okay, it's just one red and one blue. Okay, so if you had more, you should do more. And at this stage, you should look for bygones and kinks. Okay, I looked for it, there is none. Okay, but if there was, you should get rid of it. Okay, and again, it's well defined. You know, you could have get rid of the kinks when you first saw it, and but there was none, so I didn't do it. Okay. But at any stage, if you see bygone or kinks, you could get rid of it, okay? And then, okay, well then you can redraw it as red and then blue and connect it the right way, okay? And then you get the sign permutation out of it. And in this way, you know, if you can see a mistake if you have sort of left out a bygone or a kink, okay? But you should get rid of it, okay? So that's an example.
Is it unique canonical diagram or the pattern? Is this only canonical, unique? So my question is, are there two different diagrams of one
No. It's one-to-one correspondence. That's why it's a classification. So it's not just an invariant, it's a classification. Mm-hmm. So two different canonical diagrams are necessarily two different flat virtual long nodes. Mm-hmm. Is that what you did that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What to do with this?
This has never happened to me.
Sorry.
You cannot take this one and
pull it. I cannot move it. Oh, sorry, let me. I think it's because I'm in full swing.
Now you come back?
Yes. Okay, good. Sorry. Okay, so I have 15 minutes. Okay, so the second part of my thesis is the associated gradient. I'm really glad that you guys all know what associated gradient is for these knots already. Well, let me just say a word about it. So the associated gradient space that we want to look at is the target space of a universal finite type invariant, namely the one associated to the filtration by powers of the augmentation idea. Okay, so in here, the structure would be, you know, circuit algebra. And so the powers and augmentation ideal is a bit generalized. But really, it boils down to, okay, I'm going to part of this here. So it boils down to the following. And then okay. So right. Okay. So okay, first of all, what would it be in the end? In the very end, for just single component, the associated gradient for descending long knots would be arrow diagrams. You already know what arrow diagrams is. Okay, so I have one long skeleton, and then for me, it's going to be just right-pointing arrows because it's descending. Okay, so right-pointing arrows that spans the space. And then modulo 6T relation. Okay, so I'm going to show how we get this 6T relation. It comes from the randomizer 3. But Dror has done the 4T relation for W. So this is sort of a, you know, this will reduce to the 4T relation for W if you consider the tails commute relation. Okay, so so why do we care? So in a way, maybe that's why we cared about virtual knots in the first place, because just like for usual chord diagrams, so for usual chord diagrams, there's the map from the chord diagrams into the tensors of universal enveloping algebra of metrized finite-dimensional Lie algebra. Okay, for the arrowed case, instead of going to that kind of Lie algebra, you go to finite-dimensional Lie bi-algebra. Okay, so right, so Lie bi-algebra just means instead of just having a bracket, you also have a co-bracket. Okay, so I won't say more, but essentially you will have vertices like this, which maps to the bracket. And then you will also have, this is different from the W case, because in W you only have two in, one out. So for V, you would also have one in, two out. And that should map to your co-bracket. And everything works. Okay, so you have IHX that would be the Jacobi for this, Jacobi for this, and also you would have a five-term IHX that would be the compatibility between these guys. Okay, good. So I don't know, should I say more about the six-term relation? Like, should I derive it or?
Exercise.
Okay,
I think it's been derived at some point.
Okay, good. Okay, good. So I won't do it. Okay. Then that's make my life easy.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Because I was comparing this situation to the algebra associated to the positive Mercur group, I mean the welded pure weight group, but just the positive part, and he has a similar diagram algebra with 40 plus take commute plus take commute. But where it is the fact that then the generators are the square of generator is equal to 1?
That is because I have picked only right arrows. Right. So the fact that the generators, right. So I have this equals. Yeah, I can do crossing flips.
Okay, I see.
Right. But in terms of. Yeah, but I still want to say it. Sorry. Can I still say it? Okay. So, if I draw it as a Gauss diagram, I would have, so say this is 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2. In terms of Gauss diagram, I would have, this, and then minus equals this plus. Okay, so crossing flips the over and under and flips the sign. Okay. And then you do this as at the associated graded level, but you just get the same thing, but dotted. Okay. And then you use this again just like when I did flat split back into descending, I could do this at the arrow diagram level as well. So I could just pick always descending no matter what the sign is. Okay, so I just have a map that splits to the right pointing arrow then. Okay. Anyways, what's the result? So again, we know what 6T is. So this is a bunch of commutators. So this is the switching of the orderings of these two chords, switching of the orderings of these two chords, switching of these two chords. And if you were thinking of just, you know, if I weren't looking at one strand and I label these I, J, K, and I call this Rij, Rjk, and Rik, then this relation would have been the classical Yang-Baxter equation. Okay, so, we're almost done. So theorem, we have a basis for this algebra, and the basis is really nice. It's just a set of diagrams where before one point, all the arrows point out, and after one point, all the arrows come in. And clearly, this is in one-to-one correspondence with the permutations. Okay. And again, I mean, I can have any number of arrows, so this is sort of union of all the permutations. Okay. So we see that the six-term relation is homogeneous, right? All the diagrams have two chords, two arrows. So this algebra, I could consider it. I could consider the degree of the algebra. Okay. So at each degree, then clearly the dimension is n factorial because it's in one-to-one correspondence with Sn. Okay. Again, it generalizes to n strand skeleton. I haven't calculated the dimension. Okay, but it generalizes. So I want to say that I have actually lied a tiny bit. This was not the associated graded of what I did in the first part. Okay, so it is a variant of flat virtual log knots. Okay, so so just like you know, for usual log knots, you could consider it framed or not framed, which amounts to dropping or including R1, right? But in fact, you could do a finer sort of separation. You could include all R2, 3, but you could also include just some of it. Okay? Some of it meaning, so if I have R2, there's two kinds of orientation, the one where there's a cycle and the one where there is not. So we call this braid-like and we call this cyclic. Similarly for R3, you could have no cycle, or you could have cycle, right? So you could exclude this, and you would get a proper subset of randomized moves, okay? And then for each of these cases, so you could include all of them, both of them, or you can include just the bright light ones. And then for each of them, you could include R1 or not. Okay? So the thing that this is the associated graded of is the one where I've only included the grade like randomized moves. Okay? And in fact, if you include this as well, so Jor and others found that you don't only have the 60 relation, you have more. You have also this relation that looks like this?
We had a discussion of it before you came.
Okay,
so.
Fine.
No, you can still write it. You're just.
Well, okay, it is the relation that you have discussed that looks like this. Okay? And I also have a basis for that. Okay. But for that basis, huh?
What's the dimension?
What's the dimension?
Yes.
I haven't calculated that. So for that, actually, it's not just. So this basis that I get is sort of a quadratic Grobner basis, but when I include this, I need to exclude also a degree 3 term. Okay, so it's a sort of, I have to exclude elements at degree 3 as well. Okay, so, but anyways, I have not calculated the dimension. This is the easy one that I can just put. So even more interestingly, when you look at each of these guys, you know, if you fix the number of skeleton, clearly it is an algebra. Because what is the multiplication? You could concatenate, right? Right. I mean, if I take one of these diagrams and another one, I could just concatenate them. And in fact, it's a graded algebra. Okay, because my it's a graded algebra because my relation is homogeneous. Okay, so what I have for one strand would be a graded algebra graded in the numbers of arrow, which has the same dimension as you know the group ring of the permutation group, but then it's a completely different algebra. Okay. And you could do the same thing to n strand. So for if you fix any number of strands, clearly you could concatenate, and there's still an algebra. But in fact, you could consider them all together. Okay? You could consider elements with different number of strands. And then there's a gluing structure, similar to the circuit algebra. So you just glue together the strands. So you could have many, many operations, just however way you want to glue them. Okay? And it includes concatenation. Okay? And in fact, this gluing structure is what I used to prove the basis. The basis is a Grobner basis, but generalized to chord diagrams. Okay. I will say a bit more about this if I have time. But let me just say that I think I have this, but I thought I really had it, except I talked with Ettinghoff, and he said he couldn't find a usual group. Basically, okay, what's the problem? So using this method of Grobner basis generalized to sort of chord diagram algebras, I could also find a basis for the horizontal chord diagrams. Okay, so if you consider, well, clearly, so if you consider n skeleton strand and just include horizontal arrows, modulo horizontal 6T relation, well, you can try to find a basis for that. Okay, and the argument that I have, I think, works for the horizontal as well. And they claim that they could not find a Grobner basis in the usual sense. Usual sense meaning, you know, define ordering of generators, you know, using sort of lexicographical ordering. Okay, so maybe, so but I should check the dimensions before I say something, but I really think it works. Okay, so So what is Grobner basis? Grobner basis is actually a very simple thing. Just, what is it? So it sort of hinges on the fact that you need an ordering on your set of basis elements, so the free basis, okay? Which the main point is that it has to respect your algebraic structure. You have to have a partial ordering that respects the algebraic structure, right? So that's why you use the lexicographical ordering for associative algebra. So here, what I do is just, well, you define an ordering on diagrams, which has to respect sort of gluing structure. Gluing just means sort of adding other chords onto your skeleton. So, you know, if two diagrams, one is bigger than the other, and if I, however way I add other chords onto the skeleton, the ordering should be preserved. Okay. And then there's other properties, you know, other things that you need for the basis, which is just, you know, each of your relations. So for the six-term relation, you need one unique leading term. And then for the relations among relations, you have to have one unique leading term. Okay, so that you could do some sort of argument like I did before. Basically show that your sorting is well-defined. Okay. And then one of the main things that I would need to show that the sorting of the well-defined is this sort of relation of six-term relations. So here, this just means a six-term relation on these three strands. Okay, so when I put it here, it just means my chords ends here, here, and here for the six-term relation. So here is a relation of relations that is 24 terms, because it's sum over all four ways of placing the 60. Okay? So you could skip any one of these and put your 60 relation on the strands. Okay? And then for each of these ways, you need to sum over all three ways of placing the extra arrow. So I have skipped this strand. Now I have an arrow that is on the skipped strand, but the other end could be here, here, here. Okay, so there's three other ones. And then I need to take the commutator. So this is a relation that looks like it comes from nowhere. But in fact, Andrew wanted me to talk about this in my defense. He asked me to draw it at the end, but I couldn't. But in fact, this relation, this syzygy, comes from the thing that's called the zomological tetrahedron. So it's the one, it's the syzygy that sort of you might think I'm drawing a big diagram, but what I learned from my defense is that this is a very easy thing. So, so I have this. Okay, so I mark this crossing and this crossing. Okay. Now you could put your fingers here and start doing rhytomycin moves by moving this all the way around the red and come back to the original. So that sequence of rhytomycin moves gives me this this syzygy. Okay. That's it.
So, any question? Yes.
Yes. So on Badger knot diagram.
On you, what? Sorry.
Badger knot diagram.
Mm-hmm.
You arrow the rhytomycin moves on real crossing, right?
Yes.
Yes. Then, I think there are many chemical diagrams for flat Badger long knot, right? Because for example, this diagram,
mm-hmm.
you can erase crossing 3 and 5 by move the above strand to the below, right?
Wait, say that again.
Mm-hmm. Supposing 3 and supposing 5,
mm-hmm.
you can put it down below the red line, right?
No, because here
mm-hmm.
It's not straight from 3 to 5.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you're saying? Like I cannot...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you mean I could pull it down?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not... Wait, You would.
So, for example, this sort of crescent commute on the top left is not a load, and you would need it,
yes.
Well, then, can you exchange the crossing
right.
4 and 5?
Right.
No. It's quite simple. I can pass this.
No, I cannot.
Why? Is that randomizer free, right?
But then I would have... You mean, so if I actually do like this...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if I do this using real randomizer moves, then I create other crossings.
Yes.
And then I would have... And those crossings, one of them would have to be red. So I would actually sort of go backwards.
So we are not allowed to add new crossings.
You can add new crossings, but well, I guess you can't in the end. The thing is, the canonical diagram should have only one red and one blue.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you do another move like that, you would always, I think. Add another red.
And then by using your method, you can obtain.
And then, right, so if I do that, and then I sort again, I would get back to this diagram.
Uh-huh.
Right, that's actually the non-trivial part of the proof, is to show that, you know, if you do these, that it's well-defined under randomized. Yes. I'm glad you asked.
I have another question. It's a general question, but probably the answer is simple and not easy to think about. But so you have some arrow diagram for flat virtual objects. Yeah. You can think about an arrow diagram for flat pure virtual object. I mean.
You mean arrow diagrams or Gauss diagrams?
Arrow diagrams.
Right. That's what I.
Yes.
Right.
These arrow diagrams embed canonically in the arrow diagram for virtual objects?
So you're asking me
this one, it seems to me for the case of virtual objects, just that you are taking the arrow diagram just with arrows in one sense.
Right, so here I have arrows. Going this way equals arrows.
Yes, you identify
going this way
with the other one.
Right, and then I map both of them in the flat to something. Right, to. Okay. And then when I go back, I have my.
Still a section.
Yes, it's still a section.
That was
yes. Yeah. So it's sort of the same thing, just
mapping.
Yeah,
the
letter of bread
device is flat virtual bread loop inject into the virtual bread loop, I see.
The what?
The flat virtual bread loop is also inject into the virtual bread loop.
Yeah, I think so. I think by the same.
I mean, there
is
a split exact same.
Yes, exactly the same way.
So
exactly the same way that the not
the
flat virtual is the same
it's
as descending. I think
it's a triangular
loop
of
VM. Yeah. It's exactly.
Yes.
So right. So that group is so nice. I cannot repeat it right now, but the flat virtual braid group. My friend Peter, who studied that paper of Bartol, Dietingov, Erica, and Reins, told me that this is the fundamental group of the permutohedron.
Okay, which deals with the additional relation.
I think that's what the Beer paper constructed. Mm-hmm. So this is a nice group.
Yes.
It's a beautiful picture. But I cannot repeat it right now.
Okay. So, how much can you do for RON?
For
RON?
I cannot do any. Well, so the round is a quotient of flat, right?
Okay.
Because...
of long, you mean?
Yeah. So the round is a quotient of long by basically... So equating sort of where you cut along your round, right? I don't know what to do for it right now. Because it's much harder. It seems much harder, actually. It's sort of... I would have infinitely more relations in this way. So... good question. That would be my next question, but I don't. It seems very hard to me right now. Yes.
Okay. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you.
And, we start.